Like Freakonomics, dollars and sex takes economics and converts it into a science by applying the principles of supply and demand and other market forces to matters of love, courtship, sex, and marriage. As she does in her blog, author Marina Achade explores the marketplace for sex and love using research, economic analysis, and humor to reveal just how central the interplay of libido, gender, love, power, and economic forces is to the most important choices that we make it in our lives. Call it sexonomics. We welcome Marina Achade to the roundtable this morning. Marina, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Give us a sense of how you came to this concept originally.
Originally, the idea was actually not to write a book or take into the broader product. The idea was to teach a course for university students that, taught them economics and gave them the basic economic tools that we want them to have, but taught it to them using a subject that really related to their own lives that they could really appreciate. And then, as you can imagine, the students really flocked to this idea because, you know, they've been learning a lot of the things that we always teach undergraduate economics students, you know, about macroeconomy, about markets. But this is something that they gave them, you know, something that they could relate to. And so that was the general idea. And then I went from there to writing the blog, and the blog actually was originally intended for my students as a learning tool. And it kind of took off. The blog moved to Big Think, and it got a bigger readership. And then I realized that this material was of interest to other people outside of just my classroom.
Is there something that many of us, because my initial thought was that, oh, is that something that we want economics involved in? But of course it already is, right?
Yeah, no, that's exactly. So the book it's not a self-help book where I'm encouraging people to see their love life as a market, although actually I think I am encouraging people to see their love life as a market, not because that's the way they should be operating, but because it already is a market. And I think that taking economics and applying it to your relationships, the most intimate relationships you have, it really just gives you some more clarity about how those relationships operate. And so that really is the purpose, is that we economics already applies. It's just seeing it through that lens.
So what is our job as a human? what is our job to what should we be looking at? It's not like so you know you don't go to the financial pages and figure this out. So what is the information that we should be looking at to help guide us?
I think that the information, I mean, I guess it depends on what stage you are in your life, right? I mean, I talk about a variety of different stages in your life, and I think this really is a life cycle. So, for example, if you're a college student and you're looking at your life and you're looking at your personal relationships, and, for example, why you can't find somebody to have a long-term relationship with, then it's really worth looking at the market. And one of the interesting things about the college student market is that there's this huge imbalance between women and men on campuses, where there's many, many more women on campus than there are men. And so what that means is that men are a relatively scarce resource and women are relatively abundant, and that's actually driving the outcomes in the market. So that's what, if that was the stage of your life, then that would be useful to you. And then if you were post-college and you're dating and you're dating online, it's really worthwhile thinking about those markets and how the markets operate, in particular in the way that people use the tools of online dating sites to search, and how they have a tendency to create very thin markets for themselves, and that makes it even more difficult to find a mate than if you didn't have the tools available to you. And so on and so forth, right up into, you know, people who are seniors and searching and understanding those markets, because those markets are actually very different than the markets we have earlier in our lives, because people start looking for different things when they're older and they're post having children and they're perhaps retired.
So how do we do this without seeing opportunistic?
You mean the individual being opportunistic?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I guess actually, just, you know, the idea that I'm going to run into somebody in a cafe and fall in love with them, that's more opportunistic, I think, than actually understand the market.
No, that's luck.
But, you know, I mean, the idea is not to encourage people to take things like income, for example, and make finding somebody who has a high income as their primary goal, because that's, I mean, that, first of all, I don't even think that would work for most people, and it certainly isn't going to lead to personal happiness. The idea is more to understand how we search and how our searching, you know, that's what there's our, we make our own choices when we search on the market, but we're still subject to market forces. We're still subject to the fact that we're limited by what other people are searching for. You know, the thing about economics and applying economics to sex and love, and the economic concept that most people understand is the idea of supply and demand. But markets for romance are actually very different because, you know, we don't have money to ease our transitions the way that other markets do. So it really isn't like buying, you know, a pizza. And so we're constrained by finding somebody who wants to buy what we're selling, but also who's selling what we want to buy. And so these is more like a barter economy. I think that understanding that and understanding the market forces and how they influence our choices, I think is really important for people.
You, just following up on that, you talk in the book about how marriage is much like bargaining, that you are constantly negotiating.
Yeah, no, I think marriage is about bargaining. Bargaining in the economic sense is defined like this. If you're married and you have a disagreement on something, whether or not you're going to have another child, whether you're going to go to Disney for your next holiday, something along those lines, bargaining power is measured as the probability that when you have a disagreement with your spouse that you're going to get your own way. So households with very equal bargaining power, you have a 50-50 chance that you're going to get your own way. And when it's very unequally distributed, then one person always gets their own way, another person always loses. And I'm sure there's lots of people who are listening right now who are thinking, yeah, that's me, that's my marriage. But, you know, the markets actually influence bargaining power, because bargaining power is determined by what people's outside options are. So, for example, in the past, women had very little choices outside of marriage. They couldn't own property. They didn't have the education and income to support themselves. And so that gave them very little bargaining power in marriage. Now that women have more outside options, that's actually giving women more bargaining power within their marriages, and it's making bargaining power more evenly distributed within the home. So even if you're off the market in the sense that you're married, even then the markets still influence the decisions that you make in your own relationships.
And you point out that marriage is, when you look at the recent findings and what we know right now, that more wealthy people marry than less wealthy people.
Yeah, you know, if you go back to the 1970s, there was very little relationship between income and education and marriage rates. So everybody was roughly married at approximately the same rate. So it's like 75% of the population was married regardless of income. Cut forward to now, there's been a big divide where people who are educated and have higher incomes are much more likely to be married than people who have lower incomes. Part of that is not that the lower income people just don't marry, but they're much more likely to divorce. And so, for example, particularly women who have very low education, they're less likely to marry, they're more likely to divorce once they marry, and they're less likely to remarry once they're divorced. And so this creates a big divide. It's almost creating like a marriage class system where households where the people who are high income earners have much higher incomes because they have two high income earners in the house. And incomes with lower income earners are much poorer because not only do they have a low income, but there's only just one of them there. So it has a kind of far-reaching implications for society in general when marriage rates change among the people of different income groups.
You have described hookup culture on college campuses as a buyer's market. How so?
Well, I mean, I try to stay away from the idea of saying that men are buyers on these markets and women are sellers, because I think in any market, we are all buyers and sellers. Having said that, there's much bigger costs to women of having been in a hookup type relationship rather than a long-term relationship, because they have greater risk of becoming pregnant, and the cost of them of being pregnant is much higher. They have higher infection rates for sexually transmitted diseases. And so because of that, and because, you know, other biological imperatives, when men get to determine the way the market's operating, you tend to get more hookup and more casual sex and less serious traditional type dating relationships. And so what we observe on college campuses and actually also in high schools is that when you have lots and lots of women on those markets and very few men, the preferences of the men determine the outcomes of the market. And so in college campuses today, in high schools, to a lesser extent, but still true, like by the time you get to grade 12, there's far more female students than there are male students. In those places, you get more hooking up and less traditional dating, and it's being driven entirely by the market.
So when it comes to our overall love story, if you will, what is the main economic factor that's likely to have the biggest impact?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, there's a variety of different economic factors that have the biggest impact. But I think that really the thing for people as an individual is their value on the market. And we might not like to think about ourselves that way in terms of having value on the market. But it's true because, different characteristics are in greater demand than are others. And so your own value on the market and understanding your own value on the market is important if you want to think about how your market's going to clear and how you're going to get the best outcome for yourself. And it's important for people to understand the value on the market because, unfortunately, for people who don't know where they sit on the market, they have a tendency to search and search and search because they feel that they have high value on the market and that they should be able to find somebody else who also has high value on the market. And so this leads to people being single for long periods of time because they're constantly searching for the perfect person. And the perfect person is possibly somebody who they're never going to find the perfect person who wants them back, which is not to say, of course, people don't find perfect people for themselves. They do. And people fall in love every day. But I think it's important for people to know where they are on the market.
And so ultimately, how do you see people using this book?
Ultimately, from my perspective, I think the best way to use the book is not as a self-help guide to find the love of your life. That's not the intention. The purpose of the book is to understand how economic factors influence outcome. And this isn't just for your own personal life, but also for society as a whole. I think it's interesting if you want to think about, for example, how marriage has changed over the last two decades and how marriage is going to change in the future. It's important to take into consideration economic forces because economic forces are determining those outcomes. So really, the purpose of the book is to use economics to give ourselves more clarity about the world in which we live, our own personal lives, and the broader community in which we live.
Well, it's all very interesting. The name of the new book is Dollars and Cents. It is published by Chronicle. Marina, thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure.
Oh, great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Again, the name of the book is Dollars and Sex, published by Chronicle. Marina Adshade is the author. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.